Hi guys, and welcome to Rewatchable episode 89, where we're going to be covering Avatar The Last Airbender episode 6, The Avatar and the Fire Lord, and episode 7, The Runaway. As always, our contact information is as follows. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can get hold of us with your lovely 140 character tweets at @re_watchable. And you can also comment on this post on hyperball.com. Happy New Year. As you can hear, it is Danya. I am back. And today I'm being joined by Ariana and Mikhail. So say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. New Year. New episode. One of my favorite episodes. Seriously, I love episode 6 so much. So let's get right into it, because we're probably going to talk a lot about this one. So, chapter 6, The Avatar and the Fire Lord. In this chapter, we find out that Fire Lord Sozin and Avatar Roku were like besties for life back in the day. So Sozin gave Roku a beautiful barrette to remember their love, and he went off and traveled the world and became the Avatar and came back to town with that hottie he was pseudo-stalking before, because women never know what they want unless what they want is power. But then everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked. Sozin was like, I'm bored, dude, let's take over the world. And Roku was like, no, I just want to live on my volcano, even though everything is falling to sheet. And so the volcano blew up the island, and just like in season 1 when the fortune teller told Katara she was destined to marry Zuko. But wait, Aang beat the battle of the volcano because he had friends, and Roku has a friend too. Never mind, Sozin just lets the Avatar die in the lava because he is a sucky war strategist and doesn't think long term. After that, he goes and kills all of the airbenders because he is a sucky war strategist and doesn't think long term. And also, Zuko has a mental breakdown when he finds out Aang is his great grandpa.
Well done, Ariana.
This is a beautiful synopsis. I want this one framed, I think. Mm-hmm. like done in needle art. With, like, a comet at the top and a volcano at the bottom. Yeah. It would be beautiful. It would hang on my wall.
I want a dragon around the edge.
Yes! Yes, the two dragons.
Honestly, I want a dragon around the edge of everything.
Yeah,
so it's not really different for me, but yeah.
Yeah. So, Roku and Sozin's bromance. How did you feel about that, Ariana?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know. I thought it was super cute at first, but then the ending was just, I don't know. I feel like so much of this wasn't well thought out, and it was so frustrating for me. It just didn't make sense. And so,
really?
I don't know. I want you guys to talk about it so I can know how to feel about their romance. Well, I wrote down all the points that didn't make sense to me. Like, the fact that it took them, like, 20 years to figure out who was the Avatar. But apparently they knew since Aang was a baby.
Well, the thing is that I don't think it was that they didn't know that Roku was the Avatar. The whole thing with Aang was that he wasn't supposed to find out until he was older than he was when he originally found out. I mean,
they tell the Avatar when they're 16. That's usually the way things go. But, like, part of... Like, that was why, like, Gyatso and that other monk had that, like, fight way back when. Because they were... He was like, we have to tell him now and, like, get started. And the other monk was like, no. And Gyatso, you know, wanted to, like, let him be a kid. So this is, like, the normal
that
way that people
makes
find
a lot
out
of sense
the Avatar.
Obviously, because...
But it's true. I mean, like, it's different. It's very different from what we know. So it's...
Yeah. So the way that Roku became... the Avatar is, like, the way that it should be done. You know, having a long time to be able to find your master and be able to learn the elements and master them.
Yeah. And he had like 12 years to learn. Yeah. And I was like, and they just tell Aang, they're like, yeah, so you really have to do this all by the end of the summer. So we hope that works out.
Yeah. That's what happens when crazy Fire Lords decide to take over the world. It's what happens when the Fire Nation attacks. You have to speed these things up. Stay on schedule, guys.
I mean, everything changes, so.
Yeah.
I did think it was super cute how Roku reminded me of, like, little Roku reminded me of Aang so much, how he's so, like, bad with women, and he's just so dorky. That was cute.
He was so dorky. I loved that. Like, that's one of my just favorite, like, things that we get to see. You know, because Roku, we've only seen him as this, like, austere, like, really old guy, you know, and then just having him be, like, this silly, like, fun-loving teenager is just really sweet, and I love it.
Yeah. I love when we revisit the past lives of the Avatars. Like, I love seeing, like, the nuances of, like, their personalities that kind of feed into each reincarnation. Mm-hmm. So I really, really love seeing, like, little bits of Roku's personality in Aang, but then them still being different enough to be their own person, because obviously the way that, you know, their lives shape them into different people, but, you know, you still get that undercurrent of familiarity between each life, so I really, really like that.
You know what would have been really bad, though? I was thinking, like, because Roku and Sozin share a birthday, and presumably, like, I think, like, just the next kid born, like, in the next nation, after the Avatar dies, becomes the next Avatar. So it's a really good thing that Roku was born before Sozin, because if Sozin had been the Avatar, it would have been even worse.
Oh, man. That would have been terrible.
Yeah, like, really
That's
bad.
What I've been saying. I've been saying I want an evil Avatar. That would make, like, a great show.
Oh, you want an evil Avatar. That's an interesting idea.
Every time I say this, people go, like, twiddle their fingers. I don't know whether to be excited or terrified.
I feel like saying no comment, but my favorite thing at the moment is just to keep saying hashtag the beach, because that's what even though we've had that episode now, I just kind of want to go,
oh my God.
Hashtag the beach. That's my new no comment. That's it. That's all you're getting.
I feel like it doesn't even really make sense, because what did we really learn in the beach? Like, nothing too revelatory.
I love that episode, though, guys. Come on.
They're all just really moody. That's basically what we learned.
Yeah. They're all moody teenagers. Mm-hmm. So, yes. Sozin's strategies for basically invading the world and kind of going a little bit crazy. Yeah. He doesn't really think things through. He's not really that great of a guy. And, yeah, as Ariana said, bad war strategist. So, I kind of love your little, blurb bit that you've put in here.
I mean, I think it's arguable, personally, because I think that, I mean, something that I do like, and it's hard to say if this is true or not, but, like, I think you can debate whether or not Roku did the right thing in, like, immediately shutting down Sozin at the wedding. Like, you understand why he did it, but at the same time, if he had been like, hey, you know, maybe we can, like, spread the wealth of the Fire Nation and the, you know, like, the way that Sozin was pitching it, it could have just been, like, giving Roku what he thought he wanted to hear, or maybe he really was like, you know, we could share our prosperity with the rest of the world by conquering them, and maybe Roku could have been like, yeah, but instead of conquering them, maybe we could just share our prosperity, you know?
No, I agree. Roku is also a stupid avatar in this episode.
He's not a stupid avatar. He is
a stupid avatar. Okay, he's right. This whole war is his fault, because, like, he shut down Sozin, and then he doesn't, like, he does have the perfect opportunity. This guy who's, like, crazy and wants to take over the world is his best friend. He can be there to, like, calm him down. And I mean, well, I was going to give a bad example now. It's like, be like the Thomas More to Henry VIII. But then, like, Thomas More got his head cut off. So that worked out badly. But, like,
you did not want to be a Thomas in Henry VIII's court. Or a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Bad time.
I don't know. And then he just goes and, as the war is, like, as he's taking over the world, he's just sitting on his volcano. He's like, yeah, I just spent most of my time on my volcano with my family.
Yeah.
He really should be more active and not just, he's a passive avatar. I don't like it.
I mean, it's hard to say because, like, I don't know. I assume he was doing other things at the same time. Like, he wasn't, like, he didn't just, like, train and go, like, well, I'm done, you know. Like, he did some things, presumably. But, you know, this episode doesn't really elaborate on that. But, I mean, I think it's debatable whether or not, like, killing the Avatar was a good or a bad thing. Like, I really like, you know, this comes up a couple of times that, like, you know, bad guys don't end up killing the Avatar because, you know, because they're going to be reincarnated. And I personally think that's a really smart way of the show getting around the fact that, like, their main character miraculously survives all the time. But I think also if Sozin was like, I'm going for the Air Nation next, you know, like, then I have kind of the opportunity to, like, to really take this out and to kidnap the Avatar as, not as an old man that people respect and know who he is, but as a child, you know, I could see that being a decent strategy too, although it's obviously horrible and I don't exactly condone that kind of behavior.
Yeah. I mean,
I guess, yeah, that does make sense. Obviously, Aang is not as powerful as Roku was. But and then probably, they just, like, killed every... It sounded like they just killed everybody to try and get him. And that, like, they killed all the air people to try and get him. But that also doesn't make sense, because then he's just going to be, like, Earth next.
Yeah.
So.
Well, maybe he wanted to keep going till they got to Fire, and then be like, we have a fresh Fire Nation avatar who I can indoctrinate.
Hmm. That would be a good plan.
Yeah.
But then, arguably, that's what you could do to Aang. I mean, if he went there, wiped out every other air nomad until it was only Aang left, and took him as a baby and brought him back to the Fire Nation, like, indoctrinating Aang would have worked just as well as doing it for someone in the Fire Nation by the time the cycle got back around to that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it all depends on, you know, like, I guess it maybe took longer. I mean, certainly I'm not arguing that, like, Sozin is this brilliant military mind. Like, he obviously makes some serious mistakes and he, like, sails right over this iceberg, you know, which I thought was just a really cool shot. But, I see both sides of the argument. Obviously, again, one side is evil, but, you know.
Yeah.
Beauty and the Beast Stockholm Syndrome.
Have you just read ahead?
Well, it is the point that we're on, but...
Yeah. Okay, so I'll read this out. Oh, Ariana, do you want to read out just so that Beauty and the Beast Stockholm Syndrome thing makes sense?
Well, it's just what we've been talking about. Like McCall said, that we shouldn't kill the Avatar. You should, like, take him in and indoctrinate him and make him love you, like Beauty and the Beast and the Stockholm Syndrome.
Do you know what it makes me think of a little bit? Have you guys seen The Prince of Egypt?
No.
Yes.
Okay. The Prince of Egypt is basically the vastly superior version of Exodus Gods and Kings.
Yes, I've seen that Tumblr post.
It's true. Very, very true. But it's basically the same kind of principle of, like, them taking Moses in and basically raising him like their son. It would probably, much like the Prince of Egypt, ultimately blow up in their faces.
Yes. That's why you would need a fire, because, like, part of the reason why it blows up in the Prince of Egypt is because he's like, these are my people. So that's how, like, if Aang had been taken, he'd be like, oh, but you killed all of my people.
Yeah.
That's that's a bad. But if it was a fire guy,
yeah, then and he also wouldn't care. Like if he couldn't, I could see maybe it working if he literally kidnapped Aang when he was an infant. But air nomad culture is so different. Like even being like 4 or 5 years old, I feel like Aang is going to be really difficult, especially somebody who we know Aang's personality is going to be really difficult to, like, no, world domination is awesome, you know, that's just yeah. not, you know, both nature and nurture, not at all what Aang has been raised to believe, you know. I mean, he's like, he's even now, like, you know, when the world is crazy at war, like, he is such a pacifist, it's ridiculous, you know, and that's only from when he was 12, so I, you know, I do think that it's,
Yeah, the plan needed to be expedited, like, yeah. just a tiny bit.
I mean, good luck, like, I feel like it's way harder. They couldn't find the last airbender. Like, could you imagine finding the next earthbending? Oh, no, it would have been water. Could you imagine finding, like, water and then earth, like, the earth nation? It must be, like,
oh, hell
to find the yeah. avatar that's so big. Like, where do we start?
God. That would have been hate so... it when it's the Earth guy. But, like, here's another thing that I found confusing was, like, Sozin's motivations for this. I didn't understand. He didn't seem like he was power hungry or, like, crazy like Azula. And he didn't seem... Like, I thought at first it was going to be jealousy from his best friend getting to be the Avatar, but it didn't really seem like it was that either. He just was like, I kind of feel like it.
I think he kind of almost believed his idea of, you know, taking the Fire Nation's wealth and prosperity to the rest of the world. Like, his idea of how that would work was genuinely, and I'm going to do it by taking over the world.
Yeah, like, exactly.
That's
and killing an entire people.
Well, that was already
collateral damage.
No, not at all. You know, to defend this or whatever. I'm just saying, like, Sozin first pitched this when they were like, what, 30, 25, something like that, and he didn't end up like slaughtering the Airbenders until Aang was 12, which was 12 years after, you know, after he killed Roku, which was, like, 20 years after the, you know, like, so it was a really good long period of time later, probably, like, 30-some-odd years later, so I could imagine that
makes,
like,
sense.
And, you know, like, I feel like these people who don't admit to their real motivation, probably don't even admit that to themselves their real motivations, like, the second Sozin probably faced significant opposition from, like, the Earth Nation or whatever, he was probably like, well, screw you, if you don't want to take my generosity, I'll, you know, I'll kill you all, you know, so it probably developed into that, yeah. And again, I don't think mental and emotional stability really runs in this part of the family, so.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of agree with that. It's kind of like, he's probably like, I'm giving you the gift of all of this wealth and prosperity, and I guess peace under the banner of the Fire Nation flag. And they're like, no, I think we're all right. You know, I think we're making our own prosperity. We're kind of happy with our cabbages. And thanks, but no thanks. And then he's like, excuse me, you don't get to refuse my gift. This is a gift. I am giving it to you. Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, interestingly, Donya, you know what I was thinking when it came to the part where they were establishing colonies in the Earth Kingdom?
Yeah.
You know, were you thinking the same thing?
I probably was. Yes.
Right. Okay. So if you've read the comics, then there's a particular city that becomes another particular city that started out as an Earth Nation colony, and it's a problem because it's one of the first Earth Nation colonies or Fire Nation colonies in the Earth Kingdom. And I doubt that they planned that back here, but it's cool that you can kind of connect, like, the creation of these colonies.
Like, why is it a problem? Is it because they feel like... Well, like, some people feel like they're Earth Nation, some people feel like they're Fire.
Yeah, and it kind of goes into, like, what happens after the series, so I don't really want to spoil it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it would be massive spoilers at this point. Oh,
okay. Well, I'm just projecting now. So, obviously, Aang is going to win in the end. And when that happens, like, obviously, the Fire Nation is going to be, like, chill. So, they'll, like, give back all the things they took away.
Well, that's an interesting assumption.
So then if they did that, then some of the colonies, it would be like some people wanted to be, some people would be, since they've been there for 100 years, some people would be Earth Nation, but a lot of people would be Fire Nation, which would cause problems.
Basically, I can see that. That's smart. Yes.
Like in the Patriots and the other people.
And the Tories.
The Loyalists. Yeah, whatever. Good job. Good job with your history, McCall.
Oh, well, I read My Brother Sam is Dead in sixth grade and have never been able to forget the horror of that since. So,
this is all kind of going over my
head. Oh, my goodness, right, British person.
You know what? It would be good for you. It would be like Northern Ireland.
Oh. Kind of. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no, that would be exactly what it's like. Ireland and Northern Ireland.
It's also, like, this particular thing, and we can talk about it if we ever get into the comics, but, like you can try to make a specific parallel to a specific part of the world with, you know, the eventual conflicts that develop, but it's like, hey, let's try and find a place that this doesn't apply to crickets, you know, like, whatever. People just fight over everything all the time.
Yeah. This is my bit of land. No, it's my bit of land. Yes, but do you have a flag? yes. So Ariana's favorite bit, clearly, of this episode, is Aang and Zuko's great grandpa.
Yes! Guys, I was so right, and I'm so happy.
Yes.
I was a little worried at first, because I was like, you know, we found out that Roku and Sosin were friends, and I was like, oh, whatever, I guess that's how he's connected to the Avatar. But then in the end, he's like, and also Roku, and I cheered. So.
What did you think about Iroh's voice?
It was super distracting.
Thank you.
I'm sad. Yes. I'm sad because I know it's not their fault. And they tried their hardest, but they didn't do well enough.
I know. I hate it. I mean, no offense to this guy, because again, like, it's, you know, doing another person's voice has got to be really difficult. But yeah, I never have found this Greg Baldwin, I think is his name. I've never found him.
I feel like they could have at least gotten, like, another old Asian man.
And it's trying to match it, like, trying to mimic the performance that someone else has done is extremely difficult. And I think with what he was given, he did a really good job. It's just very noticeably not the same voice for me. Like, you pick it up immediately. But again, voice acting is a very tough thing to do. And I mean, they were going to get it as close as they probably ever were going to get. And I mean,
he breathes so much. That's what I was like. Every word was paused. And
yes, that is exactly what happens.
Yeah. I mean, it reminded me a little bit of the Dumbledore situation as well.
Ugh.
Like, yeah, the Dumbledore situation.
Did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire?
Yeah. Dumbledore asked calmly.
Oh, you guys, I'm so happy with my decisions not to see those movies.
Did you never watch them?
I saw the first one, and then I was like, nope.
What? Like, you watched...
I watched Sorcerer's Stone.
Sorcerer's Stone for you, right? Yeah.
And then, And it's funny, because, like, now I'm an adult and probably wouldn't have, like, the same problems that I had back then, which were, like, they changed, like, this detail and that detail, and it was all, you know, now I probably wouldn't care that much about that, but I'm just glad that I've spared myself from what most people agree to be disappointing adaptations.
I actually really liked the first one.
Yeah, I think you would enjoy the first and second one now.
Could be.
Because they are very faithful, and they're not super deep novels to begin with, the first and second ones, so you don't feel as disappointed. You can just enjoy the ride and the cute children.
Yeah. True. It's true. But yeah, the whole situation with this, like, reminds me of the recasting thing that they had to do. And it was never going to be the same performance. I'm not going to take away that, you know, for a lot of people, they probably do prefer the newer Dumbledore, but
nobody prefers him, Danya. And if you do, I challenge you to tell me why on Twitter. I will win.
Yeah, I mean, I don't personally. I think Dumbledore was kind of what ruined a lot of the Harry Potter movies for me when they recast. I don't think it was the right casting choice. So, but again, he still did a good job with what he was given, I guess.
You are so generous, Danya.
I am the but, you know, you've got to think
of that. Of course, Sybil is your favorite Downton Abbey character.
Thanks, yeah. Well, the thing is that a lot of that comes from the writing, the script, and the direction. And if he was given the direction to perform a scene in a certain way, you know, that's obviously going to be the direction he took it in. And, you know, if that was the direction that he was given to perform those scenes and the character himself, then, you know, that's the way that it went. But I still get really, really upset about what we could have had. Anyway, less about Dumbledore.
Yeah, so what podcast are we on?
Yeah, it's like, whoops. Moving on.
I'm just taking away your job, Danya, but I really wanted to talk about how this whole Avatar/Fire Lord paradox explains Zuko and Azula, because they're both so different, but they're the only ones that have this. So.
Well, it also begs the question of whether Azula, you know, does she deserve the same consideration that Zuko has? Like, you know, she's certainly not, like, nearly as tormented as Zuko is, but if she has the same parentage and lineage, does that mean that we have to be like, well, you know, maybe she also deserves the benefit of the doubt in this case, and maybe she also can be good and whatever.
I think she does. Nobody believes me, but I think that she does deserve the benefit of the doubt, and I think that she is just as tormented as Zuko. She just doesn't show it, or she shows it in a very negative way. But I think that her mom messed her up, and
I don't disagree with you. I mean, I just, yeah. I think the problem with Azula is that she's, like, she's so disdainful of other opinions, you know? Like I could almost be more on the Azula train at this point in the story if she would, and this would just be a different character. It wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't be the same. But if she was, like, you know, like, hardcore, like, militaristic, Fire Nation princess who was groomed for this and blah blah blah, but she has that, like, sadistic streak, like, a mile wide that just, yeah, I feel like keeps getting crazy in the way, you know. Yeah,
and part of me wonders, is she crazy because of this? Like, I don't know, it seems so, because of her lineage, is that part of what makes her crazy? Because nobody else seems to be this crazy.
Well, I kind of think that the fact that, like, Sozin spent the rest of his life looking for a child, and then Azulon spent the rest of his life working, spent his entire life looking for a child, and now Ozai has dedicated his son's life to looking for a child. You know, I think it indicates that stability is not the strongest in this, you know.
Yeah, definitely not. And I mean, you kind of have to think that a lot of, I mean, the expectations of Azula and Zuko were vastly different. And I think a lot of what Azula kind of placed on herself was her own expectations. I mean, yeah, I don't know. A lot of how Zuko got messed up was, I guess, in part, the expectations placed on him by his father and his grandfather, I guess, in part as well. And, you know, the expectations of being the firstborn son. And for Azula, it's kind of like she put the expectations all on herself to always be better than her brother and to always be ahead of him. And it kind of maybe got a bit much, and then she started jumping on the crazy train. I don't know. What do you think?
Part of me feels like Azula is a natural leader and Zuko is a natural follower, and that's not saying like one is better than the other, but I think that I don't know. I'm trying to think of, I don't know. I feel so bad for both of them in different ways. And I know that it's so easy to like Zuko and so hard to like Azula. But I feel like she...
To be fair, it can be really hard to like Zuko sometimes.
Oh, well, everybody likes Zuko and everyone's like, Azula sucks. But I don't know. I feel so bad for her because I guess a lot of her qualities, I think, are good qualities that have been like demonized for women. Like she wants to be powerful and she wants to prove she's just as good, if not better than her brother. And she's a leader and she's strong, but she like takes it too far. Obviously she kills people and she's a horrible person. But I think that it's really impressive that she wants to do that. Even like, though she's the little sister.
Like, in her quest to prove herself worthy of, like, I don't know, praise or being deemed just as worthy as her brother, she just, like, I don't know.
The thing is, the reason I would not disagree with that, because you're right, but I just don't feel like the show handles it that way. I mean, Azula has always been the talented one among, you know, her and Zuko. Like, it never seems to have been an issue that she was a girl and younger and Zuko was a boy and older, and therefore she had to, like, fight for dominance or for her talents to be recognized. And maybe that's just something that the show hasn't shown us, but from the material we have, like, I don't think she is demonized for having power, for wanting to be powerful. You know, I think it's, you know, again, like the sadistic streak.
Personally. I think Ariana meant like in a traditional narrative.
That
women are demonized for, not necessarily in Avatar specifically, but
yeah,
like the way that they play on that narrative.
And I feel like what she was lacking in is she was trying to prove herself as worthy of being loved. That's how I feel, because it seems like it was so easy for her mother to love Zuko, and, you know, he was her first baby, and he's a boy. And then also, like, Iroh, I think you can see in Iroh that he prefers Zuko, or at least he doesn't understand Azula, like, when he gives her the doll, and she's like, what's this?
Yeah.
So, maybe the only one who understood her, well, I've already said this before, but the only one who understood her, or who liked her, was her dad, who's also crazy, so that makes her go more crazy. I don't know. I just feel so bad for her. Yeah. Which makes me sound like an insane person.
No, there are a good many Azula fans online. I don't actively disagree with anything you're saying. I think she's a complicated character, and I think that, you know, I'm very glad that she's on the show. I think it's a mark of how good the show is that she is kind of the main antagonist, even though, like, technically Ozai is the main antagonist, but, like, for all practical purposes, it's Azula. So, yeah. You know. But there's stuff to come, so, you know.
Yeah. So, friendships can transcend lifetimes.
I'm sorry, crying forever.
Yeah. Adiana,
I'm sure there's things that, like, you guys want to talk about that I can't hear, so. I mean, I got really excited.
It's perfectly moving as it is here.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, oh, Korra, I hope everybody comes back and helps Korra. But, yeah. That was my thought. No comment?
Yeah, we can't talk about Korra.
I will say that it struck me as so moving that Toph was the one who said that, you know, because she is so practical. Like, after Sokka, she's certainly the most practical of the group. But, you know, I think that it was very sweet to have her, like, consider that possibility.
Yeah.
Because she's not a person also who has had friends before, really. And, you know, to have that, I don't know. To have her, like, I'm interested in, like, her state of mind that she considered that appealed to her to say.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I really, really like that as well. It's such a nice moment. And, I mean, beyond that, we can't really talk about it much more other than in the context of just this episode. So, sorry, Aliana.
maybe you can give out a hint, like the beach. That people will understand and then be like,
I'm not sure I want that responsibility, Michal.
Hashtag twinkle toes.
Yeah, okay. Oh no, I'm feeling really emotional now.
Yeah.
Okay, favorite scenes. Who wants to start? Do we want to start with Adriana?
Sure. I said, obviously, when we found out that Aang was Zuko's great-grandpa, because it meant that I've been right since, like, season one, so I'm happy.
Michal?
I love this episode so much. I'm serious, most of it is my favorite, but, well, okay, I love the part when Roku is learning the elements, because it's so different from what we've, you know, from Aang's, like, experience, you know, and it's like, oh, this is what happens when you have actual training, you know, and, like, are taught how to do this stuff by adults, you know, and, you know, and just that shot of him at the end, like, doing the Avatar, like, thing is so nifty, and, oh, and also just a teeny little, like, shot that I love is when Tamin, who is Roku's girlfriend, crush, wife person, when she walks by, and like he flops onto the floor, and Sozin starts like ripping out grass and putting it on his face, and I'm like, that's such a boy thing. Like, it's such a tiny little detail, but I love it.
Yeah,
oh, I wrote fan fiction
and then
about
I loved
that.
When... Okay. I love how later Aang's like, hey, it's that girl who didn't know you existed.
Projecting much, Aang?
Yeah. Just a little bit.
Okay, I will say, from a feminist perspective, I was a little bit irritated with the, like, being the Avatar doesn't hurt with the ladies.
Yeah, I know!
I was like, okay, come on. Like, and it's like, didn't know he existed? Like, clearly she did know he existed, and clearly, like, liked him, but, like, he was too much of a doofus to, like, approach her, and yeah. Whatever, you can read about it in my fanfiction, but...
Yeah, I also take exception to that. I'm just like, really? The whole point is that she got really shy and flustered whenever he was kind of, like, looking at her, And it was so obvious that she had a crush. Like, it was maybe, so obvious. Mm-hmm.
Giving them the benefit of the doubt, then maybe he meant, like, being the Avatar does help, or helps because you have confidence, so then he could have the confidence to talk to her.
Okay. I'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take that as well, because they're usually so, so good with this sort of thing, their commentary on it, that could be the way that they intended it.
But let's just say hashtag Legend of Korra here for,
Yeah.
Yeah. In regards to helping with the ladies, so.
Yeah. So my favorite scene was, Iroh and Zuko talking. Finally! Finally talking. And I guess seeing Iroh still being willing to help Zuko in his own way, like, just beautiful. I just love their relationship so much. I think it may actually be my favorite relationship of The Last Airbender, at least. So. Okay, favorite lines. Let's start with Michal.
Mine is kind of lame because Ariana stole mine because, yes, it was late to the dock, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But just like Roku saying that, like, you know, it, like, learning the elements was bitter work, but the results were worth it. Because, I mean, first of all, the way that voice actor, I don't know who he is, but the way he says, like, bitter work, is like, I get chilled. And I love the callback to the episode where Aang has so much trouble learning earthbending because he's an airbender, and Roku notes that he had a lot of trouble learning water because he is a firebender. And yeah, I like the way that loops everything together.
Yeah. Ariana?
Mine was when Roku said, some friendships are so strong they can even transcend lifetimes.
I haven't been crying about this line since 2008. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Oh, and mine was...
There's some gift sets I cannot wait to show you guys when we finish, God. And if you watch Korra.
I know. It's going to be great. Mine was less a line, more a paragraph of feelings.
You have to do the voice, don't you?
No!
Yes!
No! With the terrible voice.
No. No, because I'll... No, that's not happening under any circumstances. But it's when Iroh says, when Iroh and Zuko are talking, and he says, because understanding the struggle between your two great-grandfathers can help you better understand the battle within yourself. Evil and good are always at war inside you, Zuko. It is your nature, your legacy. But there is a bright side. Whatever happened generations ago can be resolved now by you. Because of your legacy, you alone can cleanse the sins of our family and the Fire Nation. Born in you, along with all this strife, is the power to restore balance to the world. And I love that so, so much. That Iroh has such faith in Zuko, even after, like, all of his struggles and where he is right now and where Zuko is right now. And it's just, oh, so many feelings about Zuko and his inability to, like, be a Zuko.
Well, it's also, you know, it's something that's worth noting, too, is that, like, I think we gave Roku a lot of flack in this episode, but, like, yeah, there's kind of an ongoing theme that, like, Avatars mess up, and they leave problems for the people who come after them, and the Avatars who come after them, and I think that that's a strong theme here, and it's, like, you know, like, the idea that, like, they leave problems, but maybe they also leave, like, the seeds of the solutions behind. It's just... Yeah. This is a Y7
show. So interesting.
I know.
I wonder what problems Aang will leave behind for Korra.
No,
nothing. Probably a lot, because he messes up a lot.
Cabbage Man.
He comes back for revenge.
Revenge of the Cabbage Man. Love it. Right, let's move on to chapter 7, The Runaway. In this chapter, the gang goes gambling because they have loose morals and no mothers. Can we just leave it at that?
That's really it. I mean, you need Sparky Sparky Boom Man, and then that's basically the episode.
Meanwhile, back at the camp, Katara is no fun because she is always right. She tells them to stop cheating, and the gang tells her to stop mothering because, unlike Zuko, they do not think her mommy complex is hot stuff. So Katara goes and soaks in the pool like a mermaid, and Toph and Sokka go have a romantic rendezvous on the cliffs where they air out their Katara baggage and realize they do miss their mothers and love annoying Katara because someone has to set the rules and clean the dishes and every friend group needs a mom. So Katara is like, okay, let's pull off one last scam, my bitches, because movies don't exist, so she doesn't know that's a bad idea. So they turn Toph into the cops, and it looks like they might make off with the money, but then everything changes when Zuko's cyborg guy shows up. Toph has some wood problems, but it's... but it's fine because Katara finally uses her brains and realizes she's like, duh, 60% water, and they run away to fight another day. Toph has some wood problems.
Oh dear. Title of the episode?
Yeah, probably. That would make a really good episode title. People would just be like,
wood problems.
What? So, we have another Katara and Toph fight episode. Were you on the same side that you were on the last time the Katara Toph fight episode happened, or have you changed sides? Do you think someone was more or less in the right, or could you see both sides of it?
You guys weren't on last time.
No, I wasn't. No.
Was I?
I mean, I will say I pretty much always root for Toph. I know you weren't.
Okay.
I know you weren't on, Danya, because Natalie was definitely on.
I think we can all hear what Natalie is saying right now.
I started off on Toph's side being like, oh, come on, Katara, it's just fun. But then pretty soon I was like, actually, Katara's totally right. Like, that's probably a bad idea. So I was once again, I guess, on Katara's side. Although I hate having to pick sides because... apparently, the girls are the only ones who fight on this show, but
I mean, that's fine. Not necessarily. Katara and Sokka fought a couple of episodes ago in the Painted Lady episode.
Oh, that's true.
Katara and Sokka fight a lot. And
yeah.
Katara fights with everybody. I don't really blame her because everybody else is a mess usually, but
yeah.
I mean, Aang and Katara have fought also. And Aang and Toph have fought.
Yeah, that's true.
Sokka and Toph haven't fought because they're in love and they'll be together forever, but...
What about you, Michal? Were you on someone's side more than the other, or did you just...
I mean...
did you kind of see both sides?
So we're talking about the chase?
No, this episode.
One. Oh, in this one.
Let's not beat the chase to death, please. Okay. I can't anymore.
But it is funny that one's called The Chase and this is called The Runaway, though. That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
I agree. Like, Toph's schemes, like, seem harmless enough to begin with. Like, I don't mind, like, taking advantage of little, like, street scammers, you know?
Yeah.
But it definitely, definitely gets out of hand. I think Katara just doesn't know. So, yeah, I mean, like, at first I'm like, chill, Katara, but then I'm like, no, you're right, Katara. She's just not, she's not good at communicating on a, like, this is going to sound, like, terrible, but I don't mean it as bad as it sounds, but, like, as equals, you know, like, she's used to being bossy,
that makes sense.
You know, and, yeah. And I don't mean that she thinks she's, like, superior to everyone. She just thinks that, like, she knows better. I mean, she might. Cases, but...
She might think she's superior to everyone. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think 90% of people think that they're superior to everyone.
fair enough.
But she's bad at hiding it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess, like, if I really thought that she thought she was, like, so much better than everyone else, that would, I would, it would be difficult for me to, like, her. I think she's really, like, this doesn't make sense. Like, why are you doing this? How can you not see that this is idiotic? You know? And that's, you know, where she's coming from here. And, like, the problem is that she plays that card many times. So, like, you know, that's kind of her, like, go-to argument, and it's, like, but that it's not always relevant, applicable, I should say. So, you know, when it comes to this,
she always, you know. Yeah, she always gets stuck being the one who's, like, taking away the fun, which, I mean, somebody has to.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's usually her.
I mean, it's not always her. I mean, again, this season we got it a little bit with Sokka when he had his schedule and was trying to, like, move everyone along and being like, we're on a bit of a deadline here, guys. So, but I mean, she's more regularly the one that's kind of, I guess, spoiling the fun as the others see it. Because, I mean, they've got a lot of responsibility on their shoulders. And, I mean, to start with, I'm the same. I was on Toph's side and I was like, you know what? The money is kind of, they need that money for supplies and to be able to keep moving on and all of that. And, you know, the people that they were kind of swindling out of the money were swindling other people out of money.
Also, like, that first guy, like, invited them. So they weren't, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and he was even like, oh, you want to make this more interesting? So, like, I have no qualms about the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely not. But, you know, around the time when, you know, the wanted poster goes up and things get... I mean, drawing attention to yourself in that way was never going to work out well, especially when they know that Sparky Sparky Boom Boom is kind of closing in on them. You know, when they know that that guy is out there and very clearly is out to get them, you know, drawing attention to themselves in that way is never going to be a good thing. You know, fair enough, a couple of them to be able to get themselves enough money to continue on and be able to, you know, keep themselves going, have enough supplies to feed themselves and make sure that they're, you know, well nourished and they have, like, weapons and all sorts of stuff. You know, that's sensible. Doing it so often that they give themselves notoriety.
Nicknames?
And nicknames, yeah. Not so great. So, yeah. I mean, meh. I kind of see both sides, like, Toph at the start and then Katara later in the episode, so.
And I mean, it makes sense that, like, as much as it, like, it annoys me and part of me thinks that it's out of character for Katara to be like, let's pull another scam, you know, but at the same time I can kind of understand, like, you know, Toph is the only other girl in the group and, like, kind of the only other girl in her life and, like, kind of wanting to have that. You know, she's always been like that. You know, she's, I feel like, always kind of idealized what this relationship with Toph can be. And obviously Toph doesn't idealize anything, least of all Katara. So, you know, so I understand why she goes to the, like, extreme place of, like, let's do it, and, like, even more, you know, when they're all like, okay, we're
best
done.
Best friends, Toph.
Yeah. And then best we can go to a spa.
Yeah. Yeah, but it led to a really, like, this whole thing led to that really, really beautiful scene between Sokka and Toph, like, kind of talking it out. Like, you know, fair enough, they started off with Aang and Sokka started off with that ridiculous scheme of how do we make them apologize to each other and start talking again? I know, let's send letters using... what I was hearing is Hawkeye, Hawkeye the Hawk, which is,
I believe that's his my real name is that's Hawkeye. That's my problem.
Yeah, I know. I know that.
Because Sokka is so clever, though. He's like...
Yeah. I have a problem. I have a Hawkeye problem. I'm very much aware of this. So I was like, Hawkeye? What? No. No. Yeah, so sending, you know, handwritten messages from the blind girl, you know, A-plus work there, guys. But, you know, when he eventually just kind of was like, okay, this has kind of gone on long enough, let's just get this all out in the open, and Sokka knows Katara better than anyone, and knows her flaws better than anyone, because he has lived with her for his whole life, and pulling her to one side and just like that scene where they sit down and they kind of just talk it out. I love that scene beyond words. I think it's such a beautiful little moment between them, and it reveals just as much about both of them as it does about like Katara's motivations. So I don't know, how did you guys feel about that scene?
I loved it so much. It was just, it was so sweet. And I think it was really beautiful to see the way that Sokka views Katara, because they do fight a lot, but they have such an undercurrent of love. And I think that their relationship might be my favorite on this series, just because I think they've done sibling relationships really well with them and very realistically and like the fighting, but still always being there for each other. So I thought that was super sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you. I mean, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like it's you know, Katara's not my favorite character, but I, you know, it's always nice when they kind of go back to like kind of what's like what these characters like know is important, even if they're not acting like it in the moment, you know. Yeah. And it, you know, like they. Like, going back to the idea that, like, oh, right, like, they've both lost their mother, you know, like, and Toph has kind of had the opposite experience of that, and, you know, therefore needs kind of a different context in which to understand all this, and, you know, it's just, it was very sweet.
Yeah.
And it's always nice when Sokka talks about his feelings.
It was nice to see Toph talk about her feelings, yes. Too. She's so, yeah. She's so rock solid.
The little
cracked her open.
The little punch where she's like, don't you ever tell anyone.
Oh, God, my Taka heart. I can't.
Aww.
Baby. So it's a real ship. This is really exciting.
Oh, are
for
you
me,
kidding?
Guys.
Again, I've shipped this for so long. Like,
okay. Because I can tell she definitely has a crush on Sokka, and I cannot blame her for that. But I feel like Sokka, I don't know if he reciprocates. I think he's really fond of her.
I think he loves her. Yeah. I just don't think he's, like,
yeah. In love with
her. I feel like she's not really his type, because he likes all those, like, weird blonde girls, like the moon lady. Like the
his dead moon girlfriend.
Luna Love Good girls.
My last girlfriend turned into the moon.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Just, yeah. Poor Sokka. He doesn't have much luck with women. But yeah, no, I get the same vibe. I think from Toph's side, she's into him more than Sokka is kind of, like, I think, yeah, I think, again, he does love Toph, just not in the way that maybe she's hoping, but who knows
There's
what'll
time.
Happen.
I hope Droms comes. I'm so excited. I love it when people just, like, air out their feelings and yell, and it's so great.
Yeah. So, another theme of this episode was people forgetting that Toph is blind again. Except for when they're gambling.
Oh, God, that was so... Like, yeah. Her playing off of people's expectations for her is just so brilliant. And it's like, you know, like, I love Toph, but like, she doesn't always come across as like the smart one. But when she does like this kind of thing, it's like, oh no, you, like, not that she's ever stupid, obviously, but like, that she, in these situations, she's really, really cunning and canny and able to manipulate people's expectations in just such a great way. Like, what does making it more interesting mean? Yeah. It's like, oh, you know perfectly well, you know?
Yeah. I mean, she did that when she was still living at home with her parents as well. Mm-hmm. Like, she went between being the dutiful daughter, being very, very kind of dainty and frail and fragile at home with her parents, and then she goes into the ring and is kind of like this epic earthbender who's really, really strong and solid and all of that. So, you know, she has very good practice at that.
There should be a YA novel about Toph.
That would be so interesting.
Wouldn't it? They're doing Marvel YA now. There's no reason why they shouldn't do Atla YA.
Give us more of the universe.
Yeah.
Avatar will never die. Never.
I don't know if I would like that. I don't know if I want to be in one of their heads. I'd rather have like a...
Well,
like,
it's YA, so you can have like 16 different perspectives. Heads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
I mean, not that, that only YA does that. Game of Thrones does that, too, so.
Yeah. So, the last scam was... I mean, surprising no one epically fails. I mean, you gotta have that major luck.
We're just gonna go in one more time, guys. Just one more time, and then I'm done forever. Works.
I mean, to be fair, I guess they couldn't really predict just how badly it could go. But, I mean, maybe they should have been more cautious. Like, oh yeah, we didn't kill that guy, right? Like,
yeah, we ran away, and it stands to reason that he would run after us.
Or Clunk.
Yeah. Yeah. And very, very cleverly, obviously knowing their prisoners, they knew to put her in the wooden prison with problems instead of the metal prison, so she couldn't bend to like escape. So very, very clever. However, they did not take into account that Katara would epically run on the spot to make herself sweat and make Ariana's dreams come true when Katara finally sweat bends.
I've been saying this for ages, since, like, even the desert episode, I was like, they have to be sweating buckets. Why are they not using that? So I was so happy. Now maybe she'll think outside the box. Spit, I feel like, would be good. The tears of your fallen enemies, that would also be good.
I'm really surprised at why they were like, oh, wow, we really have to sweat. It's like, these guys haven't peed since episode one. Like, I mean... I'm just going to put that out there. Whatever.
Yeah. Let's move on to favorite scenes, then. Michal, do you want to go first?
I liked as many problems as I have with it, I liked the scamming montage. I thought it was very funny. And, like, seeing Sokka about the Wang Fire experience again was very funny. Because Wang Fire is not just a costume, it's an experience. And also,
experience.
Like, runner-up to the hilarious poster, because... It's just so funny.
Yes. And she's like, does it look like me? Sokka's like, yeah.
Yeah. The Wang Fire experience, by the way, sounds like Sokka's first album.
Or I could say something terrible, but I won't.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going with album.
Oh my gosh.
We're going to move straight on to Ariana's favorite scene.
Okay, so mine was obviously when Katara used her sweat to waterbend, because finally somebody is using their brains in the Water Nation. So I only hope that this leads to better things. They could take over the world easily. Brittany and Karen and I said, they need to suck out all the water from their enemies, and then they'll just be little shells of people. So that is one way to win the war.
Hashtag the beach.
Hashtag the beach? The beach? You're going for the beach?
This is my new no comment.
I'm just going to say, next time on Avatar The Last Airbender.
Yeah. My favorite scene was, and I've already talked about it, was Sokka and Toph talking on the cliff. Just, I love that scene so much. So... favorite lines. Michal, let's go.
So this was that piece of dialogue between Aang and Sokka, when they try to send the note to Toph and it epically fails. And Aang's like, I can't believe we forgot. Toph can't write. And Sokka goes, yep, we're idiots. And Aang goes, I guess plan B is we send a note to Toph pretending it's from Katara. And then Sokka goes, I think we're going to run into a similar problem. Aang is just such an idiot sometimes. Oh my god, that boy. I swear, sometimes just his brains fall out and just the air whooshes in.
Oh my gosh, you know what else was my favorite in this? This reminded me of when Katara's yelling at everybody, am I a mother? And it's just yes, ma'am.
That was really good. Ariana, do you want to do your favorite line?
Yes. So mine was when Sokka was talking about Katara to Toph, and he goes, I'm going to tell you something crazy. I never told anyone this before, but honestly, I'm not sure I can remember what my mother looked like. It really seems like my whole life Katara's been the one looking out for me. She's always been the one that's there. And now when I try and picture my mom, Katara's is the only face I can picture.
Oh, it's so sad.
On a light. Sorry.
No, well, I was about to bring it down. So, another thing that I really liked about this episode is everybody kept talking about how Katara is so motherly. And last week, Brittany and I said that Zuko needs someone who's more motherly. So, I just wanted to bring up Zutara again.
Of course. Because it's not an episode of Rewatchable without a little bit of Zutara.
Obviously.
I have to say, though, that makes me so happy because, my first rewatch through first watch through Avatar, I was, crazy for Zutara. So.
And now we know what train you're on.
I mean, I still have fond feelings for them. Don't get me wrong. I'm not, anti the ship or anything. I just, yeah.
Yeah. My favorite line was when Toph's well... It sounds like a sheet of paper, but I guess you're referring to what's on the sheet of paper. because I love the little moments that come out of when the gang forgets that Toph is blind. Just treat her like they would any other person, and she has to remind them in really funny and interesting ways that, hey guys, remember, I'm blind. But
just like when she forgot in the chase that she was blind.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah. And that's it. I think we've covered everything that we were going to cover. So we'll move into
really talk about Sparky Sparky Boo Man.
Who cares about him?
Yeah, as Ariana put in here, the cyborg is back. Nobody cares. but I mean, do you think he's going to come back again? Do you think this is the last we've seen of him?
No, I feel like he's going to come back and still nobody's going to care. And eventually he's going to fail to kill Aang and nobody will care.
Now I'm almost feeling bad for the guy.
Yeah. Thanks, Ariana.
But we have something to call him now, and that's good.
Yeah. Though I still like Sparky Sparky Boom.
Oh, what's his new name?
Combustion Man.
Oh, no.
Which doesn't make much more sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll move into our listener feedback in a moment, but again, let me give you our contact information so you can leave us some feedback if you want to, and we'll read some of it out on air. So our email address is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can get hold of us on Twitter @re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hyperball.com when the episode goes up. And alternatively, if you would like to leave us an iTunes review, if you rate us 5 stars this week, Karen will snuggle you against her bosom in a warm, motherly embrace. Aw, I have experienced that, can I just point out, and it is a beautiful thing. So this is a very lovely iTunes incentive for you this week.
I mean, listeners. I've hugged Karen, I haven't done any snuggling, but...
I've shared a bed with Karen.
Well, so like, have I, but, you know.
Like, we end up cuddling, like, all the time, and then she takes pictures of my sleeping face and puts them on Facebook. So, you know, it's...
Oh, man.
That's how our relationship, our friendship works. So, yep. If you are friends with me on Facebook, that is a picture that exists of me that apparently I gave her permission to take, but I don't remember actually speaking at all. So I'm not entirely sure if that's true or not.
This is the thing with Karen, guys. She's super sweet, but also super wily.
And we love her very much. We do.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
Jeez.
So, listener feedback for this week. We have a hyperbole comment from Ashley that says, if Katara was the non-bender, wouldn't she just adapt like Sokka has as the non-bender? I don't think she'd be useless. Of course, if she lost her bending instead of being born without it, it'd be another story. But I still believe she'd adapt to the circumstances as is life.
This is my fault because I said Katara would be useless without her water. So I apologize. As you can tell, I love Katara. But I do think that a lot of the benders rely very heavily on their bending and would feel a little bit lost without it. Which is why Zuko is kind of cool because he can do his martial arts sword fighting thing.
Yeah. That's like my favorite thing about Zuko, that like at the end of the day, he's kind of a sucky firebender. I kind of love it, yeah. But I mean, I think the thing with Katara is just that, like, it's hard to consider because it would be such a different show, you know? Because yeah. Bending has been such a part of Katara's journey and is a part of her personality and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. From Twitter, we have 2 tweets this week. One from Peggy, who is @Janie081, who says, finally catching up on episodes, Buff Iroh is awesome. And I caught up on my rewatching episodes today. And can I just say that the scene where that little rolled up, I think it's like a blanket, where he's like making it look like he still has the huge stomach. When he like, just lets that fall out and, like, rips his top off. And he's, like, goes back into exercising. That scene is still fantastic every single time. I love it. And we also have one from Gordon, who is @GordyWalls. Says, also, how much older does everyone look now, especially compared to the pilot? Sokka's all lanky and everything. #Rugrats all grown up. And this tweet twofold makes me nostalgic for when they were still little babies all the way back in season 1. But also twofold is making me super emotional because the voice actress for Chucky died very recently.
Yeah, she did.
And I'm still really upset about it because I loved Rugrats when I was a kid. Like, I still love it now. Like, I'll catch an episode every now and again when it's on, like, a rerun on TV. And, oh, that's a really sad way to finish off the episode. I'm a terrible person.
No, but it is really, like, it's pretty surprising now when I look back. Because I went to go watch... Oh, I wanted to watch the scene, like, the necklace scene. When Zuko's, like, holding Katara's necklace, and he's like, I have your necklace, because I wanted to see if, like, we were really crazy, and I was like, no, it's still, like, super erotic. But I was watching it, and I was like, dang, they look so much younger. I think it's the Fire Nation clothes, honestly. Like, everyone just looks hotter in Fire Nation clothes, as we have said before.
Maybe yeah. That was Sozin's motivation. Like, those guys all look drab and young. I really, really just need to do something about this. It's like, their fashion is terrible. They all look awful.
So he was actually just the Effie Trinket of the world at that point?
See, I was thinking Miranda Priestly from The Devil Wears Prada.
Oh!
And Roku is his, like, his Andy. Oh, no. That's terrible. We're going to leave that episode there before we descend into even further madness and start deciding to conquer the world. So, we'll see you again. Well, I'll see you again in 2 weeks, but maybe these guys will see you again next week. So, for now, I'm Danya.
Hi, Michal.
And I'm Mariana.
Bye, guys.
Flameo.
Bye.
Flameo.